Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Larmer, joined once again today by John Endres. Let's get into the news stories of today, and the first thing we're going to talk about is a comment from the Secretary General of the ANC Youth League, who has said something that is, I think, quite insane, although I think it is worth, before we get into this, kind of wondering whether the ANC Youth League really still exists as an organization or whether it's more sort of an in-theory type of thing. But anyway, the Secretary General of the ANC Youth League has said that if there is not significant economic growth in the country, there will be a revolution against white people. He says that South Africa is on the brink of a revolution that will see young people rise up against white South Africans if the economy continues to perform sluggishly. He said, quote, what you are doing, speaking about the lack of investment by businesses, particularly white-owned businesses in South Africa, this was his claim. He said, quote, what you are doing is almost treason to allow your country to be like a country at war when you have almost 60% of youth unemployment. It's a disturbing analysis when you get to crunch the numbers. Any progressive and patriotic capital invests in their nation state. He went on to say, the revolution we are talking about is when these majority black South Africans will enter the farms and occupy them. They will enter the factories and occupy them. The workers will be turning against their bosses and taking over factories. That is the revolution we are warning about. If we don't grow the economy for economic opportunities and jobs for most South Africans, we are going to enter into a revolution that may not be controllable. He then went on to say, that is why we are clear that we support the government of national unity so long as it preoccupies itself with the industrialization of the economy, so long as the GNU ensures the economy is efficient and not expensive. He also spent a lot of time complaining about the trade imbalance with China. So, John, there is so much here. I mean, firstly, this is eerily similar to Julius Malema's infamous comments that there would be this inevitable revolution against white people and that he's not calling for the genocide of whites yet. I think this is very much from the same kind of school of thought. And yet, at the same time, it sort of bizarrely realizes the real problem in South Africa, which is our lack of economic growth. It's just all of the solutions proposed are kind of completely mad. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Well, what strikes me about it is that it seems somewhat sad and pathetic in the sense that I think that political discourse in South Africa has moved on from this kind of language. And hearing it coming from an organization which, as you point out, seems to have almost ceased to exist, it just seems very out of place in the post-election South Africa. I think that much of the ANC has moved on in its thinking. I think the EFF is still stuck in the revolutionary mode, so is MK to some extent, and clearly so is the Youth League as well. But what we hear from the kind of language that Mr. Ngudla was using here, it is very much what you would read in Karl Marx's works. You know, it's the oppressed working class rising up against the bourgeoisie, seizing the means of production, storming the factories, occupying the farms, and taking over the running of these entities. It's very 19th century language, and it's I think misplaced in today's South Africa. And what makes it a little bit sad is that the ANC Youth League does not appear to have a new language. They haven't got a new idea of how to make themselves relevant, how to express their youthful fervor and their anger at the bad situation that South Africa is in a useful way. So they revert back to really old stereotypes, old language, old norms. But it does seem somewhat out of place today.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many problems with this. Firstly, just like its idea that there's all this money just being hoarded away by white South Africans that could simply be invested and make magical economic growth is I think ridiculous. And then it's also, you know, kind of mad to just expect people to put up money into failing enterprises, as many state enterprises are, and in such bad economic conditions, for little, you know, hope of much return. It's not like the government's going to have the money to bail people out if they suddenly start making patriotic investments. Also, I mean, this is slightly off topic, but I don't think this fantasy of the workers and the lower classes rising up in this uncontrolled revolution is it's not really actually how these sort of revolutions take place in reality. They're almost always led by a out of favor elite who tries to capture the state, and they motivate sort of popular resentment for that. So the only people who are in danger of doing that, I think, are probably in the ANC League and the EFF. And I think they've been trying that for years to little success because South Africans are far more sensible than the EFF would have you believe. A bizarre and economically illiterate and racist brand. But I do think this shows that the ANC, as you say, it's sort of, he identifies the real problem, which is lack of economic growth. You know, he's not necessarily talking about straight up redistribution here. And that's kind of interesting. Any final thoughts?
Yeah. That's like youth unemployment, he identifies that correctly and identifies lack of investment correctly. He identifies the lack of exports correctly. But I think all of these things are misinterpreted economically. So you can see that the economic theories he studied are old theories, ones which I think have been superseded in the meantime and replaced with much better theories.
All right, on to our next story, and this is to do with Stats SA and the country's most recent disputed census, which is been pretty controversial. The census was a significant undercount, way outside the standards that the censuses are supposed to normally have, and so lots of statistical adjustments were made behind the scenes to kind of get the thing to work, and a lot of independent statisticians have criticized the government's census. At the same time, we've also learned now that Stats SA is in a very poor state. 21% of its jobs are vacant at the moment. There are sort of 3,000 staff members, and something like 600 of them are empty at the moment. And most of the staff are moving on to international companies because they don't see any point in spending time in an organization where they're not that well paid, and also where the technology is way out of date. Now, you may think, okay, well, this is just some sort of, you know, this is a statistical thing. It's only for weird political nerds like us. But actually, this has pretty profound consequences. National budget allocations are often made based on the census. And that means that all of the metros in the country, with the exception of Cape Town and Buffalo City, which is East London, are now facing large budget reductions over the next 3 to 5 years. Nelson Mandela Bay is facing a 30% smaller budget. Now, that's not great, especially when the census that it's all supposed to be based on is in dispute. John, what do you make of the story?
Yeah, so two stories really here. The one is, I think, the state of Stats SA. We know that the Treasury has been trying to hold back on spending to keep spending under control. But Stats SA, I think, is bearing the brunt of it in part. And that's quite a big problem, because you need good information to provide good governance in a country like South Africa. And we read in the article that there are various studies that Stats SA used to do, which it has simply stopped doing because it doesn't have the people, it doesn't have the resources to keep doing them. Its budgets have been decreasing over time. And this is a really big problem. What compounds it is that the amount of money required to fix the problem is actually not that great. It's about 300 million rand over the next 3 years, which, sure, is a lot of money, but in the context of a country like South Africa, of the whole budget, is a really minuscule amount. So I do hope that the Treasury finds it in its heart and in its wallet to send some more money to Stats SA for them to fill the vacant posts and keep doing the research that they need to do. And then the second story is really about the cut in budgets of some of the metros. I cannot imagine that this is going to be allowed to stand. I cannot imagine Nelson Mandela Bay being able to deal with a 30% year-on-year cut in its budget. And the same applies to the other metros as well. So I suspect what's going to happen at some stage is after some protracted negotiations, some form of deal will be struck in order to make sure that the cut in the budget is not as dramatic or as sudden as it now seems to be implied. What kind of deal that's going to be, I'm not sure yet, but it may be that it's going to be distributed over several years instead of coming in one go. So that is, if you assume that the population statistics, the new ones, are accurate, according to which the metros have smaller populations than used to be thought and therefore deserve less funding. If that is accurate, then you sort of go on a glide path towards lower budgets for the metros. I think that's what's probably going to happen. But yeah, quite a big deal.
Indeed. And yet another state institution that is not functioning as it should be, and quite a critical one, as you point out. All right, let's go on to our last story. And this is the DA has been running for a while, a campaign which is supposed to, I think, culminate today in a national day of action against the massive tariff increase that's been proposed by Eskom. Eskom has proposed a 36% increase in the electricity tariff. This has not yet been approved by the Energy Regulator of South Africa. But, you know, I think it's very likely that there's still going to be a very big increase in the price, regardless of whether 36% is the final number. The DA's energy spokesperson, Kevin Milam, said the DA is resolute in its opposition to these extortionate increases, which threaten the livelihood of millions of South Africans, forcing them to choose between keeping the lights on or putting food on the table. So, John, I mean, I think that it really is grating on the soul to have to pay a third more for electricity to an organization that has only just seems to be able to stabilize its supply of electricity and actually provide the service it's supposed to, especially when we know how much waste and mismanagement there's been at Eskom. But at the same time, you know, Eskom does need money because it's been so badly run for so long and has so much to catch up on. I mean, you know, if we don't get a big price increase, are we going to go back to load shedding? I mean, that's presumably what Eskom would say. What do you make of this?
Yeah, that's really big. That's a big concern. And underlying all of this is, of course, the fact that you need stable electricity for an economy to grow, but you also need affordable electricity. And the kind of escalations that we've seen in electricity prices have been really very, very steep. What it also reflects, I think, is something we've been warning about for a while, which is the risk of a death spiral, a utility death spiral for Eskom. And the idea here is that the service that the utility provides is so bad and its prices rise so fast that everybody who can moves off away from Eskom and sort of starts generating their own power or just not using electricity anymore and instead, you know, eating by candlelight and cooking with gas and doing anything but use Eskom. So everybody, all the paying customers drop off until you're left with one customer, and then Eskom has to charge that one customer the entire cost of maintaining the entire grid, all the maintenance, all the coal purchases fall on the shoulders of one person. And then, of course, it becomes slightly unsustainable. That's the extreme ending of where the situation is leading to. We won't get quite to that point. But nonetheless, this is the process that we're undergoing at the moment, which is that there are more and more people not paying for electricity, not using Eskom electricity. Eskom has a huge grid, which it has to maintain. It's got the power stations, which it has to maintain. It really needs to figure out its funding approach, because it cannot keep escalating costs. That's just going to push more people off Eskom, off the grid, and also sink the economy. So they need a better plan, I think, than, you know, just asking for more money every year.
No, exactly. It's clear that this should not be our problem. This is very much Eskom's problem, and they should be the ones making the sacrifices. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. We hope that you found the show interesting. That's a wrap. Cheers, everyone. Have a good day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.